as far as I'm aware, for the normal business of the committee, we need about 3 members. Eh? According to the rules, we can take presentations and continue with the normal business of the committee only if we have to decide on an item. Is then that we need a quorum. And a quorum should be 6 because the committee has to consist of 11 members. So we're well constituted to take.
Actually, it's a third of the 11 chair, which is 4.
Oh, not 3, 2, 4. Yeah. We are 5 now, so we can. We can proceed with the business of the day. Maybe just to fill in the members, last week after our meeting, I had a session with the support staff for this committee, and we managed to draft some tentative program, which we will we'll have to consider it today. And basically, we decided that today is going to be a bit of an orientation session, because not all of us who are in this committee were in the committee during the last parliament, the 5th parliament. So we need some bit of a background information and some explanation of what happened in the past, what lessons we can learn from the issues that arose in the previous committee, and then develop the way forward. So we've asked Mr. Jenkins to prepare something for us today as part of that orientation session. And then the next one is going to be the committee program. We had to sit, maybe let me just explain that, we had to sit now between 12 and 3, because we couldn't do it early, as the same support staff that is supporting us is also supporting the chief whip squad, which sits between
9, 10 and 11.
Yeah. So we thought that we can then have our meeting from 12, because it's Wednesdays, 12 to 3. This we have got 3 hours to deal with the meeting. But going forward, we'll decide when exactly do you want to meet. Sometimes it will be necessary that we meet on Fridays. And even after hours. But that will be determined by the program and the business of the committee. Okay, what is next on the apologies? Do you have apologies?
It's Honorable Maluleka and Honorable Lotrit, the common late.
What? He's just wrapping up his committee. He'll be joining us. The agenda? As I said, mainly the orientation and the committee program. But we'll start with the minutes first. Any other issue that we want to add on the item? None? Okay, let's get to the minutes. Thank you. terminate this time. Someone last week maybe. First page. Any comment on the first page? The second page, which was about the election of the chair, the method before the committee. And the last page, page number 3. Any comments? None? Can I get the mover for the adoption of the minute?
Don't have one.
Oh, by the way, Rule 1, which is the definition section,
of the assembly rules. It defines misconduct as any breach of the NA rule, except a breach of the code of conduct, which is regulated by the Joint Ethics Committee, and contempt. Now, there is a bit of gray area when it comes to misconduct, because the disciplinary committee is also empowered to deal with misconduct. So, if you read the Rule 214, there's a footnote that this matter is still subject to the review of the rules. There were matters that were referred to this committee in the last term, which the committee felt were not sufficiently serious as misconduct, and that is, they should be referred to the disciplinary committee. That was the recommendation. The committee, when after a matter has been referred to it, must then change a report in the House. And it doesn't report to the Speaker. Now, Section 25, let me just explain Section 25. Section 25 provides members of the public who have been aggrieved by what was said about them in the House. They write to the Speaker and evoke Section 25. That they want to have a response recorded. We had an incident, two incidents that were referred to this committee in the last Parliament. One was from Mr. Nazim Howard, who was the CEO of Ogbay. Unfortunately, he withdrew, the cabinet withdrew that complaint. The other complaint was from Mr. Gillan. Something was said about him by the chief whip of the EFF, and he lodged a complaint in terms of rules. The committee considered the matter and agreed that there is justification to have a response recorded. The response was recorded, was published in the ETC, I think, around about the 6th of December last year. So it's a mechanism that provides members who agree to have it. Basically, Mr. Gillan, well, Mr. Shivambo had alleged that Mr. Gillan is corrupt. And he gave a response basically saying that there is no tribunal, disciplinary hearing, court that it find that it made such a finding against him. And the evidence is enough. Yeah, that's in substance. So you are allowed to put a different version.
That version that was recorded?
Yeah.
Not the allegations?
Well, no, it was that version. Because that the version includes the response to the allegation. It states what the allegation was. And then he gives his own version or his own response to that allegation.
So the papers to allow members of the public agree.
Of course, it's up to the committee to agree to that. It's not an automatic right. Mm. Yeah. The committee might reject that. That or change, even change the shorter. And that with Mr. Gillan, his initial response was amended by the committee. Yeah. And then you send back to him. And then he agreed and then we went ahead and published it.
Okay. So explain the disciplinary committee and this committee.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, explain the disciplinary committee and the powers and privileges committee.
If you look at the composition, the compositions are different. With this one, it's the principle of proportionality applies. The NCL6. Two, F, one, and 12 members from the other parties. With the disciplinary committee, the composition is headed by, is chaired by the different speaker. Each party is allowed to appoint or nominate a senior whip or a way, but we don't have whip, a representative to the committee. So that is currently the committee has about 12 members. So the principle of proportionality doesn't apply. That's one of the major differences. I'm not sure whether the thinking of the committee of the review, and that's reflecting that personally, the thinking of the review process was to really allow members to be spoken to by their own peers, to correct the I'm saying in my recollection
the
of the thinking behind it, of the DC, is that it allows members to be spoken to by their own peers in a more of less informal environment than the institution of strictly disciplinary measures. Because there is no procedure that is spelled out for dealing with misconduct for the disciplinary committee, as proposed to the schedule. Now, I'm not saying that if you look at the powers and privileges committee, if the committee after having investigated a matter, then the powers and privileges committee feels that a member must be charged. There is a schedule which is attached to the joint rules that the committee must follow. From formulating the charge, I'm entering into friendly terrain, from appointing an initiator who will, so to speak, prosecute the case. Now, there is no such a procedure for the disciplinary committee.
Yeah, you see, the reason why I want to explain the DC and I think it has to be an elaborate explanation.
Yes.
So that we understand the difference between the powers and privileges and the DC and the reference. Because we get matters referred to by the state. How do they get matters? Through the same procedure. And because we also deal with matters of misconduct by members. And what are they dealing with? And what regulates their functions as a disciplinary committee? Is there loose arrangement or is it by the rules? So what I'm saying is that please explain the truth so that we can then have an idea of what we're doing.
And the interface of the future.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, and I'm going to ask my colleague to interrupt me if I'm getting it wrong, but there are three units. Three things that can happen. One is you breach the code of ethics. That's a joint rules. You don't have to worry about that. But there's references in the functions of these two committees to mention things. So when a member has breached the code, neither the member's ethics, neither the disciplinary committee nor the powers and privileges committee here. It shouldn't even be coming here. So if it's referred here one reports that there's a matter that falls outside the scope of this committee. Now, certain actions, now there's two other actions. The one is called misconduct. Misconduct is a breach of the rules. But so is contempt of parliament. Contempt of parliament is defined in the Act, section 13 of the Act. Misconduct is defined in the definitions of the rules, the NA rules. But they overlap. So the usual step is that both gets referred here. For this committee to say, well, this matter does not fit squarely within section 13 of the Act. But this committee looks at contempt of parliament. So where a breach of rules amounts to contempt of parliament as defined in the Act, this committee decides on that. In accordance with the procedure that's in my presentation, that's scheduled to the NA group. If this committee looks at the action, as we have received from the House, looks at it and say, well, yes, there's a breach of the rules, but it is not as serious, doesn't go as far as those penalties require, as the Act requires, but it's a breach of the rules, then it's possibly misconduct. Only misconduct, not also either a breach of parliamentary privilege or contempt of parliament. The report then, as my colleague Galeka said, this committee in the past has then reported back to the House that this matter should rather go to a different committee, but it doesn't constitute contempt of parliament. So we're not going to deal with it. So then it will go to the disciplinary committee. If the speaker feels it must go there. So that's the difference. So this is a more formal committee than a disciplinary one. Deals with more serious matters. That in terms of legislation is the contempt of parliament, and some of it might even constitute matters of criminal issues, which in terms of the Act one can also then refer to the National Director of Public Prosecution. I think it will be very minimal, but that's the level, the status of what's happening in this committee. More serious than
that.
Before they continue, can I ask a question related to whether there have been, other than the two cases that you referred to you made reference to, has there been in the past term a situation where a matter was decided on related to a misdemeanor that happened in Parliament where members were either made to withdraw whatever, or the report given to the Speaker led to the different outcomes that you have explained, like for example the sanctions that this committee would give, the member being made to rise in parliament and either do whatever that needs to be done, a referral to prosecuting authorities and all that. Has there been such instances?
The one issue that went to full extent was the 2014 disruption of the state of the nation. With an ad hoc committee, I think, but it was in terms of section 12 and 13 of the Act. And there were sanctions that the House adopted, and it was challenged in court. And the Parliament was successful. I refer to that in my presentation.
Okay.
Now there's others as well that was referred to this committee in the previous Parliament. Some of those, I think the one of Honourable Ngozi and Honourable
Shibambaru.
Shivambu, Minister of Home Affairs,
State of Security.
State Security. There was the issue of the finger, there was the middle finger that was given, what happened in some of them. I don't know how important. I think my colleague what happened was when the committee looked at some of these, some of the members already apologized. So when the members when the member has apologized, the committee took a different view of the Act and said, well, this matter is done. We don't have to go any further than that. There were also issues where some of the members raised the issue that was referred to the committee and then withdrew it and said, I'm happy. Between the member and myself, who had disagreement in the House, we sorted it out, we don't have to take any further. The committee discussed it and also consider the matter close. So it has taken those decisions on the court.
For both this committee and the committee, it is the speaker that says of contempt and misconduct. So the speaker will be advised to which committee to refer. So the committee doesn't have the power to initiate investigations into misconduct or contempt.
Oh, it's
always like
but are we also supposed to deal with misconduct?
Yes. But as I said, there's a grey area between the two committees on misconduct.
Okay.
which I think the rules of abuse to clarify, or at least provide guidance about how are we going to process, when is the matter going to be referred to this committee or to the other committee.
Okay.
I think I've covered. I just wanted to get the example.
I think what we can
ask the Jenkins to get GY into the case study. Example that there was an issue that went before these cases. I can't remember whether it went to the Constitutional Court, but that is something that I've asked Jenkins to take us forward.
Code is in at the bottom. It is plugged in here.
Chair, our permit in the Ministry of Parliament and the Provincial Legislative Act, I find that this is the functions and purpose of this committee is very important to look at that. There's not
as much through the rules. My colleagues went through the score and all those procedural issues with things, but when it gets into the nitty-gritty, this is what you need to look at. So just as a background, the Powers and Privileges Act is a result of what the Constitution allows Parliament to do, to say you can, in national legislation, provide for further powers and privileges for both Parliament and for provincial legislatures. And this is what this Act is doing. It came into operation in 2004, and as a result of a court case, we made amendments in 2018, which came into effect on 6 May 2019. I've heard earlier some members asking why did they get one act in this first handout and then there was another act that was given later on. And that is the result, because this first act is the 2004 act without the amendment. So the act we distributed later on, and apologies for not explaining it, is the one with the amendment. The amendments, I'll deal with in the next slide, just to finish up the background. The focus area for my presentation, section 12, deals with disciplinary action against members for contempt. It sets out the procedure and empowers the committee to do what it does. And then section 13 deals with what is conduct that constitutes contempt. So the amendment, as I mentioned, is a result of the DA versus Speaker. It's a 2016 Constitutional Court case which the DA took on because of how members were treated in the House. I think that was the initial reason. But during the court case, what happened, it became a more of a, what I call it, an academic exercise to see whether the drafting of Section 11 is correct. Because the Section 11 then referred, and members had the old act, refers to a person that causes a disturbance in the House. And of course, the disturbance is very wide. It goes so wide that it includes your privilege that you get, your freedom of speech that you get from the Constitution. So they ordered Parliament to put in that section 11 that a person other than a member. We argue that was always the intention. Members were never subject to section 11 of the Act, because section 11 allows you to be arrested and removed from the precinct for what has happened. But that is the amendment. There's a few other textual amendments, but what we've done is we've redefined disturbance to also exclude members, and then to amend section 11 to say other than a member, a person other than a member. That so
anything to your left to explain, because not everybody has read section 11.
Okay.
So let's not assume.
Okay.
Say this is what section 11 is saying.
Okay.
And then I'm worried you have summarized too much, you know.
Yeah, no.
You should have given us the facts of the case between the Democratic Alliance and the Speaker. To say this was the issue and this was the ruling of the court. So you mentioned the case where besides the explanation, you know, we're not even following.
Okay. I don't know if members have the act with them. If we look at section 11, I can put it on, but they have the section 11 is put on the screen.
Which one do
you
look at, because
there's
this amendment?
I will look at the amendment now, because I can show you which part we included in following the court case. It's on the screen now, but the screen is on the side. If you read it slowly, it says a person, and then the part that we amended, a person other than a member who creates or takes part in any disturbance in the precinct while Parliament or a House or a committee is meeting, may be arrested and removed from the precincts on the order of the Speaker or the Chairperson, or a person designated by the Speaker or the Chairperson, by a staff member or a member of the Security Service. So, the court, when it looks at Section 11, it says you are creating a possibility of a member being arrested for what has happened in the House or in the committee. And freedom of speech is a very important, very wide freedom that members have. That case followed another disturbance in the House I can't remember if it was the State of the Nation or it was questions to the President, but there were members removed at that stage. I think Honourable Lotrick was in the committee that dealt with it, and I think she wanted to get her attention.
Yes, it was the
Solomon.
So,
what is in Devonshire with a person other than a member?
Yes. But you are not helping us. The purpose of today's orientation was to create replicas, get research, understand the cases, decided cases that are relevant to this committee, and then take members through so that we don't repeat the same thing. So we must understand what was the issue about this little case that was decided by the court. Because we don't want to repeat the same thing. What did the court say that should happen? Understanding your point.
Chair, so now I do understand your point. Clear. I wanted to deal with the amendments to the Act, to explain to members why the Act was amended. For me, and perhaps the people disagreeing with that, for me the crux of the work of this committee is in the other case that I'm going to refer to, which is the EFF versus the Speaker of Parliament. Because that challenged what happened in this committee. It challenged the procedure in this committee. It was an ad hoc committee then, but it was a direct challenge to that. And from that, it was a challenge to the speakership herself, whether she was competent to be speaker. And there was a challenge to the resolution of the House. And that case, I think, is pretty.
Which led to the amendment to Section 11. I want us to understand this case, which led to this amendment. I want us to jump to number one.
I don't know if some of the members here were in the House. It was a disturbance. As in 2015, so 2015, not the 2014 one, but it was a disturbance in 2015,
okay,
where members rose to prevent the President from delivering the State of the Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And those members were then removed in terms of the rules that were adopted to remove members. It was sort of a special interim arrangement that were made. And there were further challenges to those rules, which I can go into, but I didn't include that because that's not for the work of this committee. That was whether a member suspended can be suspended for more than one day, whether we're partially successful in that application. But the crux matter was that members were removed, and the DA then went and said, but this is the Section 11 problem. It's too wide. There was a dispute around that whether Section 11 was even applicable in the removal of those members or whether it was just the rules and whether we've applied Section 11. And that's why it turned out to become more of a legal question in court and not a practical one. And the court then went and it went to the Constitutional Court. The court looked at it and says you're creating the possibility that a member might be arrested for what has happened in the House. And because your definition of disturbance is really wide. It is inconsistent with the freedom of speech that the NA and NCOP enjoy when they're sitting jointly at Sumner. And therefore the court went there and said, well, you have to exclude members from Section 11, which as a consequence you exclude members from creating a disturbance in the House as well. So Section 11 now is aimed at people creating disturbance outside or inside the House, but down the precincts of Parliament, and they're preventing the business of Parliament from proceeding. Then we use Section 11. Section 11 cannot be used against a member.
a member cannot cause a disturbance in a member pursuant to the freedom of speech cannot cause a disturbance on the precincts of parliament. Because
Section 11 is not applicable to me.
Correct.
So that was the amendment that was made.
Correct.
Okay.
I would
like us to just give a brief explanation in the grounds because the way it is, number one, it's not giving full background about what has happened. But it's fine. For purposes of understanding Section 11, I think it's okay. But my view is that you still need to give a bit of a background to the members.
Understood.
Because it does impact on the Act, and we need to understand the history and the background of what are the issues, what are the disputes. And we know that the court says the members can't go to the debate, but explain that.
Can I just add something little members might be concerned about? The court went on to say that the striking down of that provision does not leave Parliament defenceless, because it says that the freedom of speech is subject to the rules and orders of the House. Hence, we need to develop the rules on the removal of members.
Yeah, because you these are just anecdotes that we are venturing into now. We don't know the history of this thing, how it started. Remember, some of us are here, but our memories can't tell us where we're supposed to be in the right place.
May I propose that we be supplied with the comfort judgment, because the whole background is provided in there?
Yeah, no, I agree. That's what we ask for, that all the cases that impact on the power of the president committee, let's be supplied with it. Let's understand the background, so that even if it's not, it does not, because some of them may relate to the ruling by the speaker. But at the end of the day, it does impact on the committee. So let's understand all of that. And now, Mr. Jenkins has just put the one line up there. And it assumes that all of us know. You want to say something?
Yes, Jonathan, I thought that today's meeting, like I said, is like an orientation or induction of this committee. You started correctly by asking your questions about the difference between this committee and the disciplinary committee. And I thought, based on the documents that we've been provided with, the powers and privileges and immunities of Parliament, and is based on the Constitution, those type of information that gives us any indication on how we arrive at the point that we are in, we are this committee. And where do we derive our mandate? Who are the subjects, for lack of a better word, of the focus of this committee? Because in the act there's reference to a person, then a member, and all those type of things. We need to be helped. Even this Section 11, it talks to a person doing whatever he or she or she is doing, and it doesn't say who is this person, what is his or her relevance in the presence of Parliament. Was this person invited to Parliament to come and participate? Is it somebody who is demonstrating from outside, who has entered Parliament and is now creating the disturbance? But also there's the issue of the different actions. There's contempt, there's
misconduct
and all that. Give us, so that we then have a picture of
what can be brought to this committee, and then you can come to these matters that are related to what led to the amendment to that we are seeing. But also, are these this amendments that are involved here legal as we speak, or is it still drafting? We need that type of understanding of, because for me, this is the first encounter with the platform of this nation. So I need to know what is expected of me, what is my role in this particular committee, so that I don't assume certain things. You know, Chairperson, I'll make an example. There would be things that happen in the House that members would stand up and say, they must be referred to Powers and Privileges Committee. And I'm sitting there saying, hey, I was in the ATC of this day, seen as this member. What is my this thing here? If am I part of this decision to refer this matter to this committee? What about conflict of interest? It's all those things that you sit there, you don't know what role and how to react to certain situations. Mm. So I think it is important that we get to understand that. You know, and now that we are members of this committee, you say there are matters that have been resolved outside of the committee, and then the committee will come and be told that those members have resolved the particular issue. Do we have, you know, because sometimes people know you are part of this committee, and there's a matter referred to this committee, and they meet you, and they would want to engage you. And it's those things that we need to know, so that we don't end up being conflicted indirectly or directly, as we want to say. So it helps me to understand, to become functional in this community. Thank you, Chairman.
Hello, sir.
Chairman, I just ask, the confusion that I'm struggling with also is the second document we got, which is the is the amended act. And maybe you would just explain it, because in a number of places it refers to a person, and then in other places it refers to a member. Can you just clear that up? Because my understanding of this committee is that it can only take action against members and not the person, unless that's in the motion. So if you can maybe just clear that one up for me.
Yeah, okay. What I would suggest, because we're here now, we don't have, I ask the team to give us the background, to give us the deciding cases that impact on this, and to give us the specific incidents that were dealt with by the committee. To say, matter number one, Speaker referred this conduct to the Powers and Privileges. This was the process that was followed, this was the outcome, and so forth. Was a challenge, no. Case two, case three, case four. So that we understand all the cases that we dealt with, because that team was only active in the parliament. And there are not many cases. So I thought we were going to deal with the cases so that they tell us what are the things to avoid, what are the experiences for them. And then from there we get into the Act itself, what are the provisions of the Act, what is the procedure that we have to follow in handling cases and so forth. Now normally, I mean, for instance, I would say, in the fifth parliament, when I came here, when I got into committee, I went through a legacy report of the previous committee. And I could understand the issues that they were dealing with, how they dealt with those issues, what are the outstanding issues. But there's no legacy report of this one. If it is there, it was supposed to be part of the orientation pack to say these are the cases that they dealt with and all of that. So my request was that let's have an orientation session and get those issues. that Mr. Jenkins has document for us. Unfortunately, he does not have all the information. So I would suggest that let's proceed so that we don't, it does not become a futile exercise. Let's note the points that we want to get a follow-up engagement on, but then let's proceed with this. But as we do that, explain the person and the member, and so that's what I would suggest to you.
Thank you, Chair. The act, the work of this committee, as the provisions that I'm looking at, when it says a person other than a member, is then very specific. We don't want members involved in Section 11. That was the result of that. But where the act refers to just a person, that can be interpreted to include a member. But insofar as this committee deals with members who have committed contempt or possibly committed contempt of Parliament, we are only concerned with members. So someone being removed from the precincts of Parliament in terms of Section 11, that shouldn't come to this committee. The amendments are in operation. In the previous slide, I said they did come into effect on 6 May 2019. So they are in effect. I've been dealt with the amendments. The slide that's on there just indicate what was the amendment about. And created a bit of confusion. I didn't go into enough detail, but that whole slide is about the case. And I would apologize then that I didn't go into sufficient detail. But I think we've now beaten that horse dead. So, Jerome, if I can go to the next one, please. When the committee now gets the referral, what must it do? Now there's a schedule to the rules, to the National Assembly rules. National Assembly rules. Just called schedule. Not schedule 1, 2 or anything, just schedule. And that sets out the procedure that this committee should follow. If you look at the rules, my rules.
Page 215.
It says procedure to be followed in the investigation and determination of allegations of misconduct and contempt of Parliament. So, the Act itself says the committee must inquire into the matter in accordance with the procedure that is reasonable and procedurally fair. That's what the Act itself says in Section 12. It says before a House may take any disciplinary action against a member, the committee must inquire into the matter in accordance with the procedure that's reasonable and procedurally fair, and then table a report on its findings and recommendations. And from there one will go to the rules and the presentation that I've made. So the committee has two things that the committee must do. It must inquire into it according to a procedure and then table its findings and recommendations in the House. And then if the committee, in terms of subsection 5, that's point 3 on that slide, if the committee then finds that the member is guilty of contempt, it may impose sanctions, and the sanctions are set out in the Act.
Disciplinary action.
Yes, it's a disciplinary, not disciplinary committee, this is disciplinary action. Because that is the ambit or the scope of it. And it's Section 12 of the Act itself says disciplinary action against members for contempt. So that's there. So Jeremy, if you go to the next slide, what is the fair procedure that the Act requires? So that slide, Chair, that's what the Act says.
The Act says the committee must first inquire.
Correct.
Then
minister must be required.
Correct. So that's before and my interpretation.
That, that you require to follow the procedure.
Correct.
That follows.
Correct.
Okay. Right. We'll go to the procedure.
Yeah. So the fair procedure.
Procedure for the inquiry.
Yeah. It's not in the schedule. And I tried to unpack it a bit per point. If one starts with number two, so there's a procedure to be followed in the investigation and determination of allegations of misconduct and contempt of Parliament. Now, the rule says, or the schedule says, if the member is charged with misconduct or contempt, then a written notice must be delivered at least 5 working days before the hearing. But Jerry doesn't say, the schedule doesn't say what happens before that. It doesn't actually say to the committee how much you do your preparatory work. So my view of that is that the committee looks at precedent, and there was a report done at the end of the last parliament about all the cases. And I think, I'm not sure, but
Yes.
There was not a legacy report, but a report. Everything came to a bottleneck at the end of the fifth parliament. So the committee sat quite regularly and had to deal with a number of cases. But it created precedent, and they were very aware that it created precedent. You're not bound by it, you know. But it does give you a proper guidance.
It was 86 in December, so we'll make it available to members.
But
it
should have made available now as part of the orientation session. But now we have to have another session. Because those cases are going to help us. They create precedent. But we also learn from those experiences.
Yeah.
As this comes, so we don't have to repeat those things again. Can we get somebody to make copies of that here? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just get somebody to get a report that was in the speech.
Yeah.
And then distribute it once or
So, Chair, that's...
Okay, so the first procedure...
Yes, Chair. So, that's my view on that. So, the committee sit and consider the referral and see whether it should go further than that. And in that process, there's no fixed guideline. Sometimes it might be necessary to contact the member against whom a complaint has been made that was referred here, or sometimes it might be necessary to get the person that feels that there was something said or done against them in the House just to explain to the committee. But there the committee is free to follow itself. It's only when the committee comes to the point to say, we feel that there here was contempt of Parliament and we need to take it further, where I would say the formalities and the seriousness really kick in. Because now we must make a charge. And to get to the charge, the schedule sets out that it's either a member or somebody else from outside that must do the initiation before the committee. So it can't be a member of the committee, it must be a member outside of the committee. Or what we did in the only other example that had happened in that, and that was prior to the threat, was it? No, it was in terms of the threat procedure, was when we had someone from, I don't know if it's Waxman's attorneys or Bowman, Mr. Randall from Spoor, who then led the evidence before the committee. And that was quite a formal process. It sounded very much like a court procedure, as we get when the lawyer speaks. So there we must have strict adherence to the code, to the schedule, not the code, the schedule, and allow all of the rights of the member charged to be affected. And one of those is that the schedule itself is in complicated matters. You are allowed legal representation. Now,
as a member
who's been charged, that member is allowed legal representation. What is a complicated case? I would say we err on the side of caution there. unless it's straightforward, but mostly it will be, does it fall within the ambit of contempt of Parliament? And the way the Act defines it, and the fact that the rules don't give a lot of examples of it, and the fact that there's only been one really case that dealt with Section 12 and 13, one can expect that there will always be a request to have legal representation, especially if the initiator is a legally trained person. But it's a right. It's not unfettered, it's not that you always will have, but it says in complicated cases, but why? The decision to even allow legal representation, chairperson, cannot be taken lightly. Even that decision, I would say you need to give the person who is being charged an opportunity to respond. To say, we're not going to allow you. Why do you want to? If the committee feels it's not necessary. But it's just, I think it might even be safer in terms of the procedure to say, you're allowed legal representation. That's usually what happens in court cases, unless it's really straightforward, but to be straightforward, you need solid precedent.
So in complicated cases, a member who's charged can request legal representation.
That's the schedule, yes, Chair. It says, in complex cases, Rule 3 of the schedule, in complex cases or cases involving complicated evidence or legal issues, and where the committee is of the view that such legal representation might be essential for a fair hearing, the committee may allow the member charged to be represented by a legal practitioner who is not a member. So you are always allowed to be represented by another member as a charged member. You can always get members to come help, but an outsider committee must allow it. But that in itself would be a
complicated cases.
Complicated cases. Complicated.
So how complex a case can be is a question of, it's a subjective thing. It's how we view it, isn't it?
Correct.
It's a discretionary thing.
Yeah.
But also when you deny somebody to go to court, challenge that decision. Saying this is very complex, it may result in 1, 2, 3, so okay. But maybe before we come to that, I wanted to understand the first step. The first step is investigation.
Correct.
So the schedule doesn't provide the process of investigating. So what would be a typical investigation procedure? Sitting here, we watch the video footage, and what other form of investigation?
Chair, if I may, I would suggest, and this comes from, and we'll probably get it out of the report, is for the committee to look at the video, if there's a video. Call it video, but it's not a video. Well, I'm thinking of the VHS video.
No, it's a footage. Video footage of what happened.
Capture. So we look at that, or if it's written down, one looks at the report of it. And first decide, is this a matter that falls within this committee? Is it a type of misconduct that's also contempt of Parliament, or is it a type of misconduct that should go to the disciplinary committee? Or the easiest one would be, this is me.
But the DC, who refers matters to the DC?
The speaker.
No.
Speaker. One more.
So we can say to the House, ask the speaker to refer.
I would even say to Chair, one reports back to say that this is not within the committee's ambit. This is not contempt of Parliament. And then the speaker can decide how to deal with it. Rather the committee telling the speaker how to refer things.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I would suggest.
Because we don't... We can't instruct the speaker to refer to the DC.
Correct.
Or we cannot refer to the DC.
Yeah.
So it must be the speaker that then referred.
Yeah.
Also, the one form of investigation is for members to sit and watch the video footage and say, on the basis of this, the member can then be charged.
Correct.
Or the member cannot be charged, or this is not the right.
Chair, I would think if we look at video footage or report and we decide as a committee, and I use we because it's just more comfortable, but you know what we are. If, and I do it with respect to my apologies, if the committee feels that this is not content of Parliament, that's the end of the matter, we report it. If the committee feels that we don't have to go any further, that's the end of the matter, we report it. If the committee feels we should charge, I would suggest we get a statement from the member before we take that decision to say we are considering charging you, we've looked at the video, we would like you to explain what we saw on the video, because on the footage. And then if the committee feels after that, now we are going to make a charge, for that we need to kickstart that process, let's get an initiator, let's use a five, the initiator will help draft the charges, then we present the charges, and there's a 5-day minimum period before the hearing can happen. That is when we feel that there was contempt of Parliament and we should go forward.
Okay. Any question on step one? So we'll find about step one. So the step one is to investigate. The investigation, I think we all agree to, is to watch the footage.
And
then come to a decision whether we proceed or not.
Correct.
Okay?
Correct.
All right, step two.
So step two, when you drive those photos, step two is now when we decide.
Step two is the charge.
Yeah, we've now decided. Let's assume that we've given the member that's being charged an opportunity to apply. Step two would be then to get an initiator.
Or you said after we decide then we write to the member.
I would say before the committee takes that decision.
To say what we're considering. We think that this is similar for considering to change. Make a presentation.
Give me an explanation. Then the committee decides that we are going ahead with the charge. We get an initiator. Thus that can either be another member of the National Assembly, but not of the committee, or an outside person. We draft charges based on the Act. And those charges are then presented to the member. We give them at least 5 days, him or her 5 days before there's a hearing. And that member is entitled then, after they get the charge, to give an explanation of why it happened. And the committee needs to take that into consideration. And I would say even at that point the committee takes it into consideration, because that explanation might bring the committee to a point to maybe change course or to relook at the charges or something like that. But that explanation is an important part. The reason I'm saying that, Chair, is that in the first instance, with the EFF being charged, there was a document submitted. It was an unsigned document. It was left on the table, and the members that were charged left the procedure and they never came back. And that became rather central in the court case that I was doing, because one wants to say, but is that evidence that's not been given? Was that an explanation in terms of the procedure, in terms of the schedule that was given? So the committee, at that point, I think, and I gave advice on it. My advice was that it's not a document that was presented under oath. It's not signed. The committee should look at it. When it should look at it, it's for the committee to decide, but it was a problematic area. We didn't know 100% how to deal with it. So my advice was asked today. I would say deal with it now. Look at it. Go through it. Distinguish what is relevant in the documents to the charges and what is more of a political response to what is considered a political vendetta against that. I'm saying that not of what happened there, but that is the kind of answers that will come out from members to say this is a political matter, this is not a contempt of Parliament matter. So deal with that explanation, I would suggest, at the time, before we even start with the process, procedure of cross-examining and deciding which witnesses must come and all those kind of things. So the member is entitled to explain. Yes.
So, okay. Step two, the committee decides to charge the member. The member is then writing a letter. After the first letter, so this is going to be the second letter, which is a charge sheet.
Yes.
Step two.
Yes.
So the first letter falls under step one. That is suggested that so step two, the charge is sent on a member. The member is given 7 days. So up the member then makes a representation. So you say the committee must then sit for money and consider the
I would say yes.
Step two.
And the step two just is a reference to notice to be delivered. But it also refers to the sheriff's summons that it must be delivered by the sheriff. If it is not possible to serve the notice personally on the member, the sheriff. Now I want to know if it is the sheriff of the court, as we know it, or is there an office employment for this court?
The sheriff of the court, ma'am. Because they have the formal, they have the infrastructure, if I call it that already. They will go, and they, in terms of their applicable legislation, they serve it in a specific way. They can't get a hold of a person, they nail it to the gate or the door of where the person last lived or where the person is presumed to live or the previous place of employment, which means I come back to Parliament and nail it on the gate. Yes. But yes, but those are formal procedures that will stand up in court to say you were served. You kept running away, but you were served.
And
okay.
Has it been on the number of days now? Or is it still within that 7 days?
Well, the 7 days will only start running after the notice has been served.
Oh, okay.
So the person knows, and it's 5 days minimum, but one can call it seven because we're working with working days. But so it's a week, nothing wrong with making it more, and then you have to
Yeah, now on the step two, the committee the procedure is 5 days before the hearing, meaning the date of the hearing must be set. Now, the charge sheet must be set 5 days before the hearing. So if you say that a person can then make a presentation, and the committee must listen to that, so it's going to be made at the hearing itself.
That is a possibility. One can do it at the hearing, because in that same provision in the schedule it says the person may be present at the hearing. So it can be the same hearing where the committee will say, before we get into the formalities of reading the charges and so forth, the charges are there, we're going to deal with it, but there's an explanation of the member. Let's look at the explanation. In the instance, that first instance, the 2014 instance, that is what happened. As the committee met, the document was presented and read out to the committee, and then the members all got up and left the committee. So, and that was before the formalities came to get to read the charge to every single person that's there. So it can happen there. My view and procedure is one can also take a pause to say, let's listen to the explanation, let's consider it, let's discuss it. And then one can, as a chairperson of the committee, either say, well, let's go into the process now and deal with, think about this explanation, and we can always come back to it, or one can dispense of it right there. But the explanation is still there. I would definitely consider that as part of the response of the member to the charge. So it's a record that must be kept. And when we come, before we get to the verdict, so to speak, refer back to it as part of the evidence that either supports or does not support a verdict, and even keep it in mind when it comes to, should there be a guilty verdict, keep it in mind even when there's a criminal distinction discussed. Look again at that explanation to say, what did the member say? I mean, it could be that the member showed remorse, which will affect the way that you deal with penalties. It could be that the member shows a disregard and disrespect for the whole process, in which case that will almost speak to more aggravating penalties. But it is something that is there, that can be taken into account. I would say it's sort of a line. The response of the member and that record must run through the process and keep it always in mind.
But I hope somebody is making notes, because this must be part of the step-by-step process. What you are not just saying it because we for the sake of it, not just being noted down. Because that's what you're going to follow. The step one, and the step one, and the step one. You get the video, we take a decision. If we decide to proceed, the member will have to be written a letter and then wait for the response. Step one. Step two, take a decision to charge. We then consider appointing somebody to help. That person must have some legal background. We can either go outside, if we go outside, we'll have to ask the speaker, or we can ask somebody who's in front of parliament to draft the charge sheet and send to the member. And then we must also decide on the date of the hearing, if you want it to go to the hearing. If there are representations that must be made, or if there is any correspondence that must then be presented at the hearing, and then the members will then evaluate and then take that into consideration whether to proceed or not to proceed. So that is step two. Step two, step three, is it step two or step three, legal representation. There will be a request for legal representation, or there may not be a request, but normally people want to bring a lawyer to the church. That's the normal experience. So let's talk to that.
Sure, again, I would. I wanted to say, like I said then, not that clear in the schedule. My advice would be rather sooner than later. I would make it part of step one. When the committee starts getting to the point that this is not a matter that can be disposed of without a hearing, that we are going to do a charge, that we are going to look at the initiators, in the charge itself, when we send that charge to the member, I would say that you're entitled to legal representation. The committee has taken that decision already without him asking, you know, or asking. So that in even responding...
So it's part of the step two. No, the step one is investigation.
Yeah, step two.
Step two is the charging of the
member.
So it must be included as part of the step two.
Correct.
I mean, the committee has decided that you're entitled.
So you include it in the letter?
I would include it in the letter now.
Before it's even requested?
Before it's even requested. Because the provision says the committee may allow a member. Which is almost...
Before the right?
Yeah, you have a right to ask. Mm-hmm. But if the committee feels, you can take the decision without the committee. You can say you are allowed. You don't have to, but you are allowed to say it. The committee has taken that decision. So, in coming to the point of an explanation, that given even either in writing or verbally at the first day of the hearing, there's already legal representation available for that member. So I'll make it part of that process.
Yeah.
And that legal, Chairperson, that legal representation is from the side of Parliament, paid for by Parliament or by the member himself.
That would be by the member themselves. It's not enough in here about payment, but that would be an interesting question. The member can probably say, look, because it's so serious, it's also in the interest of Parliament that I have proper legal representation so that this whole procedure is dispensed of in a correct manner. So the Parliament will probably have to pay for that. And it's
no,
a parliamentary matter.
No, I remember, you are an employee, let's just make that example. You are an employee, you commit misconduct, your employer prefers charges like this. And then you bring legal representation. I mean, it follows that you must carry the cost of that legal representation. So in the letter, you must take it very clear up front. You may bring legal representation if you wish to. Meaning you are entitled. But Parliament will not pay for that. Let's make it clear, because I don't know anywhere where remember it's Parliament that is against the member. And accusing a member that you've committed misconduct. It can't be the same Parliament that is not known to pay for your lawyer. I mean, it's against the convention. In any process of disciplining, you can't pay for somebody that you are accusing of committing misconduct.
So, how do you deal with the situation then if it's a minister? Can they use the ministry's legal people?
If it's the minister and the conduct that he has committed in the house was in execution of his responsibility as a minister, which I doubt. This is a great area. We'll come back to that. But my feeling is that if somebody is acting in his official capacity, that person deserves to be. Because remember, the ministers are members of the executive, but they remain members of Parliament. So we will be taking action against them as members. Can you come back to that one?
That is an important point.
Yeah.
Because you would equally argue that a member who is accused of misconduct would equally argue that it was in line with his duty.
Yeah. But look, let's confirm, let's just get some more advice on that one. My view is that, I mean, why would we want the taxpayer to pay for somebody who misbehaves in the house? I mean, it's got to be very unfair. So, I would say that unless we are challenged, and I think maybe something that it can serve as a test case. Somebody challenging Parliament to afford legal representation. Remember, it does not only follow here, even at the level of the Ethics Committee. The matter will be referred to the Ethics Committee. The Ethics Committee will say, hey, explain to us here what happened. And most people use lawyers. So does it follow that when someone go and get legal advice, Parliament will pay for that?
Look, I think
think in your response to what was come into us, the precedent issues would also indicate how in the past the particular stipulation of the rule was implemented. So it will help us to actually see whether there was a precedent.
Chair, if I may on that point, get your indulgence. And we have the specific area, of course, the one case that went through the disciplinary process. Now, the members there were all in absentia, so they didn't attend. The issue of ministers, Chair, if the minister is allowed to use resources from their ministry, that would be a matter for the ministerial handbook or for the minister to account to. I hear you, Chair, and with respect, I think it's correct. One can say at your own expense. The question in my mind that comes up is, what if that member is then successful in his defense, his or her defense, and that attorney or lawyer costs them a certain amount of money? And is the member then out of pocket because he was charged and the charge was, there was a deficiency in the charge, maybe the initiator was not strong enough? And the committee decided that there was no guilty verdict, do we reimburse that member? That's another question that comes up.
But if you are an employee, you are charged, you bring your own legal presentation, you win the case, do you want to be paid back the money?
Chair, the point is that you have the option to bring an attorney. You could have chosen not to.
Yes.
So if you decide to incur the cost,
it must be at your own expense.
And decide to use a Mercedes Benz to come to your hearing rather than a the other argument is if the person feels strongly that they've been out of pocket, then they have a right to raise a full claim against the
bond.
So their right won't be.
It's not an automatic thing. It shouldn't be an automatic.
That's correct. It's not automatic. It is something. And let's look a bit into it. I can look into it and see what the.
No, my view is that you don't have to pay for people who are preparing charges against. I mean, why is this thing going to end?
True.
So, unless you are challenged, can always be done. Alright, we're on step 3 then. Or legal representation we consider to be part of step 2. Okay, we're at a hearing.
Yeah.
Step 3.
Step 3, Chair, I would say that.
Step 3 is a hearing.
Yeah.
So step 1 is the investigation. Step 2 is the charging. Step 3 is the hearing. So what do you do? What happens to the hearing?
First is the plea. So the charges are read to individual members. Or
read by who?
By the initiator. By the initiator. In the schedule it says the initiator must put the charge or charges to the member, and the chairperson must request the member to plead to the charges.
Just on this one, the initiator. Who appoints the initiator?
The committee member.
It's an open process.
No, we ask the speaker to appoint.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm sure Parliament will follow its own process.
Yes, we'll follow and procurement processes.
We will say we need a lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And then Parliament appoints one. And then that person becomes the chair.
Correct.
And that person drafts the charges.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So, step 3 at the hearing. The initiator reads the charge sheet to a member. Please, somebody put this thing in a step by step.
Yes, now we need to do it.
Yeah.
I think before it comes to the hearing, there were responses to the question, either by way of pleading or by way of asking for further particulars. I don't think they will receive the charges and then go to be tried. They are going to check this.
So
that is the tricky step number three, how they respond to the charges.
So they can request more information.
And then we need to ascertain from Parliament policies whether they are entitled to a lawyer paid for by Parliament. Because normally you hire the lawyer.
That one research, it doesn't look like the police of but our view is that Parliament should not incur the cost of a representation of a member of the charged. That is our view. Unless that view is challenged, maybe the speaker can go to court, because it's going to create precedent. And it's going to be a very expensive precedent if a court can say a member is entitled. Because you can just stand up and do what you want in your house, and then when the Parliament comes to you to say, hey, we're charging you this, you go and hire the most expensive artist to represent you at the court of Parliament. So there one clear. Okay, what do we do with the request for further particulars? Then it will have to automatically postpone the date of the hearing. Or is it automatic?
Chair?
Or it can be argued in the, at the hearing itself.
You are not, what we, I think firstly what I need to say is that the schedule was drafted by the then, by our office. Legal Services Office, and the chief legal advisor at the time was Dr. Ishan Palmer. He had a doctorate degree in criminal law and sanctions. So what he tried to do with the schedule is to say it must follow the normal criminal procedure, but it must be much less formal. So we, step two, formulated the charge, we sent a notice to the member. The member can give an explanation. In that explanation, which can be presented then at the hearing, either in writing or orally, the member can say, I need more details. What exactly do you mean I didn't comply? Let's just take an example. I don't know if it's apt or not, but an example of, yes, I refused to withdraw the statement, but I did not resist being removed. So is that a breach of the rules? I mean, the member is entitled to say, I don't think that's unparliamentary, and I'm prepared to take the consequences. Now, different people might look at that to say that there was a breach of the rules, but it's not contempt. And other people might say there is full contempt. I mean, the case before all of this happened, and I don't know, I wasn't here then, but I was aware of it. Mr. Lil, who said something in the House, and she withdrew the statement, but the House still proceeded to sanction her. And she went through a few court cases to be exonerated at the end and then to leave that precedent. So, I'm just saying that the Cape High Court said no, she is guilty, and I think the appeal court overturned that and said no, it's not. I'm not 100% sure, but that is how it can happen. So when we're dealing with a charge that's given and the member must respond, there's an explanation, and based on that explanation, the committee might say to the initiator, well, can you accommodate this member? Can we get further particulars? Where exactly are we going? It is not that criminal kind of case that Harry now that will sit there and play the cards close to the chest and to say, no, I'm going to get you because the whole world is watching me and you must make an example of you. I'm not saying that's wrong. I think it was right. And even that process went, that court case with Oscar Pistorius went through a whole turn of events and came back to that same judge to relook at the penalty. So the particular is possible,
yeah.
but it needs to be phrased in a less formal manner.
But the point you are making is, I think, that responds to honourable member. The request for further particulars will then be entertained at the hearing itself. And it will be up to the committee to decide whether we do grant further particulars. If it is raised as a mechanism to delay, we will see that we've got all the sufficient documentation to proceed. What is it that I wanted to say, by the way? Oh, okay. The issue that you're raising about, I think at the level of the investigation, we must be able to take that decision. Because if the speaker says to you, you are out of order, sit down, and then you sit down. So you cause a commotion, and then you say, sit down. And at some point on your own, you leave the house. Now, when you come in, I think you must determine the kind of things at the level of the year, of the investigation. Because for me, serious contempt is when the speaker says, leave the house, because you are causing a commotion. And you don't leave the house, the sergeant at arms comes and they throw you out. Now that is the matter I think for. But when you stand up and you say whatever you want to say, you say sit down. And then surely it can be considered because they say sit down. So some of the things have to be done so that we don't have to waste our time. Step three, the hearing, the initiate also the same.
No, that's fine, you said that I didn't. Perhaps just say that the committee should be flexible, but not up to the point where the whole case is being delayed.
Yeah.
And the committee has powers to decide we proceed regardless.
So the step three at the hearing, the initiator then initiate, ask questions. So what then becomes the role of the members? The members are there listening, or members can also pose questions?
Chair, the members can help. If we, the hearing, so it starts with the initiator putting the charge to the member. The member can give an explanation. That's now a second explanation. Critically important for yourself, Chair, is you must ask the member being charged to plead, guilty or not guilty. If the member decided not to stay, after, say, giving an explanation with the example that I mentioned earlier, the schedule says we are then presumed to plead not guilty, much like in a criminal court. If you do not plead, then it's a not guilty plea. In other words, we'll go through the whole process. If you plead guilty, that close to the end of the story, then we can go straight to what kind of sanctions must we get if there's a guilty plea. If the member pleads not guilty, or if the member refuses to plead, then it's a not guilty plea, and then we go through the next. That's the hearing now, or we're busy with the hearing, and then questions can be put to the member being charged by the initiator. Yes, or the chairperson. Or members of the committee, but members of the committee, as in any committee, speaks through the chair. So there's no direct dialogue, much like any witness before a committee. There's not this dialogue between the committee. The chair can go through it and even say, look, that question does not fit into our process here. And if you want to get personal about certain things, I'm not saying it will happen, but I'm just saying the chair is in control of this question.
So the members can ask questions,
yes.
But still the chair.
Yes.
Okay. But questions of
isn't it the actual procedure will then be followed by the initiator will ask the relevant question.
The
question,
yeah.
To extract whatever information.
Yeah.
And the members can also ask questions.
Yeah.
Or make comments, or maybe not make comments, just ask the questions.
Ask questions, yes.
Yeah.
The way I think is proper would be, we're also talking about witnesses now. So we've now started
oh,
with the hearing.
Okay.
Before we get into the hearing, remember step two was we have the charges.
Mm.
Now the initiator, and this is where the legal skill comes in, the initiator must make sure that they have all the evidence ready to prove those charges. The initiator is...
And the witnesses.
Yes, so we decide who can call for witnesses.
Okay.
And what evidence we want from these witnesses. And the witnesses may be subpoenaed, or they can come voluntarily. But certainly they will be requested formally in writing to come and attend on a specific day for a specific purpose.
So the date of the hearing itself has to be prepared for that. 100%.
Together
with the initiator.
Yes. So then, much like questioning the person charged, all the witnesses, members do it through the chair, the initiator can and the chair can, to get that evidence. What in practice happens would be the initiator has the crux question. That question, the answer of which hopefully the initiator knows already, but will be put on record as evidence to get to the guilty verdict. There's no initiator that wants a not guilty verdict. So members then can ask questions almost for clarity's sake. And so from that, some members, because they know the atmosphere in the house, if it happened in the house or a committee, better. Some of those questions might actually turn the tide to the other side to say, well, we think the initiator is a bit aggressive with this questioning. What we get from the witness itself who was there or from the person in charge is that it was not an intentional breach of privilege. It was not an intentional contempt of
fraud.
That's for the chair to determine at the end. Yes, the chair can.
Yeah.
But yes.
So, Chair, I'm really happy with the last point that the colleague raised, that you have to be very sure of yourself if you ask a question. Because when you maintain it around to make sure that we begin to contradict one another.
Mm.
So the fewer of us ask questions, the better.
Mm.
Because the fact is the initiator and the chair person are to be happy with that.
Yeah.
Because once you get the third and the fourth, they will just work on ensuring that you contradict one another.
Mm. And I think also the chair has got the responsibility to remember we are really being put in a very difficult position of having to act against our own colleagues. And sometimes we call in a member of the ANC, and the ANC members are here, and ask questions that, you know, so it's always the duty of the chair to make sure that, you know, this question, this party is not relevant, you know. Because isn't it all parties are entitled to be represented in a committee? And if you discipline a member of that party still deserves the representation. So they can ask their member a question that can be leading this way or the other way. So that's why it's the responsibility of the chair to always make sure that things are going fine. So the hearing, step three of the hearing.
I just wanted to say that you cannot limit questions to only the initiator and the chairperson.
Yeah, no, we will spread it, but always the chair will have to be understanding, hey, this one is leading this other way, but or it's a question that will help the committee to come to a conclusion. So the hearing?
Yes, Chair.
So the initiator will ask questions and the members and then everybody. colleagues, and then court witnesses. So the whole thing would be run by the initiative, almost the same way as the inquiries that you had in Parliament.
That's correct, Chair. Remembering also, because of the member being charged, of that member or that member's legal representative can also call witnesses and ask questions to their witnesses, as well as cross-examine the witnesses of the initiator.
Okay.
So all of that must be allowed. And when the chair, when you decide that a question is not relevant, I think we will have to put that in our guide, because it's irrelevant questions that I think you can say, well, that's not a question that's going to help this process. But uncomfortable questions, or questions that could actually derail the process, to say, well, this is not contempt of Parliament, I mean, that's a legitimate defence for the member being charged, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So one must just keep that in mind. But,
yeah.
But so both sides can have the same right to,
okay,
to cross. And usually what happens is that the initiator, being the initiator, will start and try and prove the case. And then the member, through with or without his legal representation, will call their witness and try and disprove the case.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, well, these things are not right, and that already started with that at cross-examination phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then the member gets a chance to call their witnesses, and the initiator can cross-examine those witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And it is at that point where the committee can decide that's enough. Now we want to deliberate and come to a verdict.
Okay.
I just to make it to the first meeting. So for my own clarity, I'd like to know who is in charge. Is it the leader of the party, or other people who are involved, or is it every member of the party?
Yeah. No, we haven't come to the stage of charging. That stage is going to be set. So, but what has happened, the speaker has referred to two incidents. The first incident involved members of the CSF in the, I think it was the mini plenary, where the Minister of Public Enterprise was to deliver the violence of the speech. The second referendum is the State of the Nation address, where the EFF had some issues before the last. I think it was the black issue, the first one, and the second one, they wanted the Minister Pravin Gordhan to do. So there was that altercation. So that was the incident that was referred. So what we are going to do as part of the step one, we'll then have to determine whether does it qualify to be charged, who gets charged, whether all the members or just one member, whatever the case may be. So that is an exercise that we should perform as part of step one, which we are intending to do next week. next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Okay. So for today is just for the to understand all these things, so that we don't get into the actual issues and then we don't understand the basis of what we're talking. So it's going to be a three-step process. All right, the first step is the penalty. Yeah. Okay, the first step is to determine whether they're guilty or not guilty.
Yes, Chair, I would say that the thing that the end of the hearing is the summing up of the evidence. That's in the schedule as well. So at the end of the hearing, after all the witnesses have been called, the initiator can then sum up the evidence for the committee and just say, this is what is presented, this is what we have on record. These specific areas of evidence proves that charge or that charge, and therefore the committee cannot make up its mind. And then the committee must come to a finding of guilty or not guilty. And I would say that's the end of that process, that step three. And step four will start with penalty. If the committee finds that the member is not guilty, that's the end of step three and the end of the process. If the committee finds that the member is guilty, we go into penalties, into sanctions. And there, the member or his or her representative must be given an opportunity to present evidence in litigation. And the initiator may present evidence or make statements in aggravation, why they think the penalty should be severe or not severe. And the committee needs to deliberate that.
So that one we put under step four.
That's step four.
Of deliberation.
Yeah.
So the end of the hearing, end of step three, and then at the end there is argument. So both parties in the state, after evaluation, these are the issues, this is what professor, the other party must then do that. And then we deliberate as part of the form, and we come to a conclusion as a committee. Step five is the function. So step five is straightforward.
Yeah.
So we've got a five-step process.
Yeah.
Are we five?
Yeah, we're five.
It's four and five.
No, I wasn't saying four.
Oh, I thought. Okay, honourable.
Just a question of clarity in terms of the initiate.
Yeah.
If I understand that the initiate, we got two options. The one option is that the initiate can come from this group, or if it is somebody from outside.
But can come from the staff of parliament.
But not from this committee.
Not from the committee.
Yeah, no, that has.
Yeah.
And then if the initiator is appointed from externally, who does that? Is the speaker's office or this committee?
The speaker.
In practice, there will be a contract signed with that person by the secretary to parliament or acting secretary.
Yeah.
Because it's a financial issue.
No, I'm fine. I just wanted to understand that.
But it's not up to us.
No.
The most important thing is that we must evaluate whether we need an initiator from internal or from external. Now, I was just having a discussion with the team here, and Mr. Jenkins was explaining the trauma that he suffered in the previous era. Some members who were charged were very personal against him, insults and so forth, and it affected him and so forth. Now, these things do happen that members of parliament technically are the employers of the staff of parliament. The employees of parliament. So ideally we want to get somebody outside so that you don't have to put the staff members or the employees under that kind of a situation where almost like the blame does not go to the committee. Of course, I think even members of the committee, we must accept that we are not going to be in the good books of those who have been referred to us. That's the difficulty about this committee, which I said, I don't want to be this committee. Because now, fighting people, ultimately. So, but I think as we come to that, we have to decide but it's always preferable that we get somebody from outside. We may limit the cost not to get a senior counsel and all, but just competent attorney who can do all of these things for us. So we've got a five-step process. First one is an inquiry investigation, which we've got some stuff, whatever, the actions under that step. Step two is the charging of a member or members. We've got some actions under there. Step three is the hearing. We've got some actions under that. Step four is deliberation, evaluating the evidence and all of that. And the last step is penalty, if you come to a conclusion that a member is guilty or what. So that will be our five-step process. And I think there's no clarity as to what then happens under each option of those steps. Okay, I will find now. So just take us through the case study first. Oh, you don't have that?
No, I do, Chair. If we... what I've done is that we've jumped two of those. The penalties I've mentioned there on the slide that's up, that's
yeah.
Just from the Act. It's only the last one, when you suspend a member with or without remuneration, but that can only happen in certain circumstances. Serious or repeated contempt, and none of the other penalties set out in subsection 5 will be sufficient. And that, I'm going to refer back to that when I discuss the EFF case. But other than that, there's not
so
much.
Suspension is part of the penalty, it's a severe
one.
Yeah.
30 day suspension. If you're not allowed to represent your constituency, it's a very severe penalty.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, you're taking away the right of people who voted for you, in a way. So it must be very severe.
So it's a severe one.
Yes.
But then I think we can weigh the pros and cons when I step by.
100%.
Yeah.
That's right. So then the next slide, Jeremy, if you want to, that's just...
I want us to be done in the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to... The
is it the committee that recommends to Parliament and the function of Parliament?
No, the committee recommends to the House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To the House?
To the people.
No.
The next slide, Jerome. The next slide what is it that we must look at? But that we can look at in stage one, before we actually decide to charge or not decide,
yeah.
We need to know what constitutes contempt. And there's various areas. It can get a bit complicated, but I think one must look at the facts, what was referred here, and then decide whether that fits in. And for interest of time, I just want to point it out and also just mention that there is a provision in the schedule that says if there is a need for it, if it's a requirement, one can actually ask that the House suspend the member pending the investigation. But even that, I think it's a very, it must be an imminent threat to the process.
Okay, this one, let's look at it on next
yeah.
week.
Yes.
When we get into
conduct, yeah.
Okay. After looking at the video footage,
yeah.
And then we'll look at this provision.
Okay, so Chair, then.
Just before you continue, there was a point, and the one where you say the repeat
repeat offense.
Repeat offenses of extra content. Are you able to look at the behavior of the member with reference to previous parliamentary sessions?
Very good question, ma'am. I would say yes. I would say yes.
It'll help a lot if it's in the same parliament. But I would say yes, because it's a repeated, there's no limitation on that. It's not in the same parliament. I would say if you committed a breach that was found to be contempt of parliament, and you back, you re-elected, and you do the same thing again, that is serious and repeated.
I think that is the sort of
the yes.
Once you find somebody as grateful, you decide on the punishment.
Yes.
And then you then look at
yes.
the whole circumstances. No,
yes.
but this person is not for the first time.
Yes.
This person has been doing that.
Yes.
So that is the understand fine.
Yeah, that's the fine.
Okay, quickly, the challenges to the
committee. Yes, so what happened, the ad hoc committee at that stage then met and made recommendations pertaining to everybody that was charged individually, and then the House adopted those recommendations. We were then served with a challenge, an interdict, it was a two-part challenge. First, the applicant, now the EFF, wanted to interdict the House from implementing the sanctions. So, and they were successful in that. The judge Dennis Davis, said that the harm Parliament will suffer by postponing the implementation is really minimal compared to the harm that will be suffered by the members of the EFF. And I must add, one of the sanctions was a suspension, which was the most serious one of the few. And the judge said, look, that's a very serious, it's a very serious penalty. The members are not allowed to access the premises, they can't go into their offices, they can't communicate with their constituencies. So let's have this whole process ventilated in court, and we interdict the penalties that the House adopted. So they basically have interdicted the House from giving effect to its own resolution. We then went through the process. Full bench considered the second part of the challenge. The second part was that the process was unfair. Not that the schedule was unfair, the process was unfair that we employed, that was there, including how we deal with whatever was left on the table when the EFF walked out. I'm saying this with respect, I don't actually like mentioning political parties from my position in working in Parliament, but it was the EFF. So the court looked at that and said the process was fair. We could have dealt with that piece of evidence, the only thing that was left from the people that were charged. You could have dealt with it in a different way, but even that was not unfair the way you dealt with it. You did consider it. You did bring it in at the end. You looked at it and said that the only thing that bothered them a little bit, and it was one judge of the three that said one thing that bothered them a little bit, is that we've picked, in the first instance that we've implemented this section, we've picked the most severe penalty. And that might be grounds for an appeal. And the EFF then appealed the judgment, took it on review and appealed it to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And we responded to their application. Well, we didn't even oppose their application because we thought that we'd rather let it get ventilated through all the courts and we get clarity on this process. So it went to the Supreme Court of Appeal from the full bench of the Western Cape High Court. But the EFF never concluded their case there. They never submitted all the documents they needed to submit, and that appeal has now fallen off the record, off the roll. So as it stands now, the process employed then is fair. There will be no proper challenge to the rules and the schedule itself. So those are then assumed to be correct and constitutional and fair. And I would say the lesson learned out of that litigation is be careful to take the most severe penalties too quickly. Rather err on the side of caution, but if it's necessary, it's there for a reason. But that was the only ground that started moving a little bit. Where even our counsel said, look at that.
The sanction was not implemented.
The sanction was not implemented at the end. None of it was implemented.
Okay.
There were different sanctions depending on how.
So
how
still
severe.
Remains unimplemented.
Still remains unimplemented. As far as I'm aware.
Shouldn't be the starting point there was a decision by the parliament, it was never implemented. It was challenged the full bench of the Western Cape High Court, ruled in favor of parliament. And the affected members then took it on appeal, then they abandoned their own appeal. Because it looks like it was abandoned. So if it is abandoned, it means the judgment of the law court then remains.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay.
Could I just ask,
as
I understand it, the sanction was part A of the application?
No, part B.
Part B.
Part A was only the interdict.
And that's what I mean?
Yes, the interdict, yes.
So the interdict still stands?
The interdict was pending the finalisation of Part B, so Part B was finalised.
Okay.
So the interdict
so
is
the
smaller. So the half, the then.
So the interdict was saying, please wait a minute, we have appealed.
Yes.
So that appeal has fallen off, so you can go ahead.
Correct.
So shouldn't we then start first by advising what would be the legal technicality that? There was a case, before we even start on the second case, there was a case which this was the outcome, no implementation. Same house then makes the same referral to us without implementing the first one. Do you think that there might be issues around technicalities, whether it's the sixth parliament, it has fallen off, some of the members were not there, are no longer there, all of that?
You had a similar question around what was then called the Joint Investigation Committee or Joint Investigation Team that was the Auditor General, I think it was the Asset Forfeiture, I can't remember, but a few on the arms deal, who started in one parliament and carried over to the next parliament. And that resolution of the previous parliament, I think it was the third parliament, the fourth parliament still dealt with that resolution. They still hung on to that resolution to say there should be regular feedback around the issue. And the Standing Committee on Public Accounts kept on dealing with reports, especially on the offsets according to those contracts that had to be monitored. So we used a resolution there of a previous parliament to give some kind of mandate to the Standing Committee on Public Accounts to continue the investigation. Whether that's strong enough in this specific instance is a matter of, yeah.
But it's a court judgment. It's not like a report to Parliament that can be revised. Because normally something that is has been considered by Parliament, when Parliament rises, then everything falls off. But this one is a decision of the court.
The decision of the court was just go ahead and do your business. But they didn't say you must do it. They just said
The decision of the court was to say, remember, Parliament took a resolution. The House of Parliament.
Yes.
It was prevented from implementing that resolution because by court, because of a court challenge.
Yes.
So if it falls off, then it was then reinstated that resolution of the House.
Yes, but not by the court.
By Parliament.
Yes, by Parliament. Parliament.
But that Parliament doesn't have to get a new resolution. Because the resolution is there.
It was not business before the House. It was business that the House has taken care of, in my view. But they have made a resolution.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the point. The point is that there was a matter before the House. The matter was dispensed with. There is a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was a challenge. That's why it was prevented.
Mm-hmm.
So we can be, we'll be well within our... I think what I'm saying is that let's get advice on it. Let's get legal advice. Because there's no point in starting new matters when the decisions are already taken, which must be implemented because PFF was not successful here. They abandoned the whole thing.
Mm.
Unless if they want to revive it. What are the court legal issues around revising a case that they want to
not sure that what we did there, if Mr. Mashile was the chairperson of that committee. So this was a legacy issue from Mr. Mashile. He kept on requesting, we kept on reporting to him how this matter is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So the state attorney assisted us with that, to the point where the appeal expired.
Mm-hmm.
So implicitly they abandoned
the state attorney advised on the 22nd of
exactly.
July.
Yeah.
So that advice was supposed to be implemented immediately.
Yes.
Was the fifth parliament was still in session?
Mm-hmm.
March last day.
Yeah,
so the functions should have been implemented immediately. Last day. Okay, maybe let's just get advice before you speak.
Although technically it was still in session until the eve of the election, but it was not sitting. It just stopped sitting, I think, on the 8th of March.
Yeah, but the penalty, what was the penalty? Was there some suspension or whatever?
There were suspensions, there were fines too.
Yeah, but the fines part should have been even the suspension.
I think also the problem was that many of those members were not members of the EFF anymore.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to implement.
Oh.
Only a core group will remain.
Yeah.
But I would propose that you take it up with the Speaker because she gives the
firm
to this committee.
Yeah.
So
what
the committee now to...
What I think we must do is let's get a on this one. But, so I don't know how long it takes. And then we can then decide after the decision that I've made about the outstanding case. My view is that this was a clear case where they should have implemented. So there was a lack of conviction in here. Okay, there's a report that has been distributed, but it's also a summary. Okay, let's look at the program.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
yes,
the first thing in the program is the day when are we meeting?
Yeah.
Meet Wednesday. We're left with 2 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're arriving on the 18th or 19th, that week. 18th is the last sitting on Wednesday, the 18th. And I'm not available on that day because I've got a long appointment matter that comes home. So we'll have to get another day there. But how about Wednesday? The reason why we're doing these meetings on Wednesday is to accommodate the committee staff that's also supporting the chief groups forum. Is Wednesday fine? Should we meet after hours? Should we meet on Friday? What I think needs to be done for now is to deal with the first step one. And then if we pass step one, we get into step two. Then we will have to take it all the way through. Because the first thing is to appoint. So I think what we need is just next week, and going forward, then it will have to be appointment of an initiator and all of that, which is something that it can't happen subsequently. What do you advise? Let's see your hand is up.
In the first instance, ma'am, there's one incident with many people that were charged. So we charge them individually, but we use one initiator for the whole process.
Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is that if there are new cases on other members,
new initiator.
Okay. No, thanks, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to speak on the program. The proposal for Wednesday or any other thing. But I'm hoping that the idea of Wednesday, for me, I don't know about other committee members who speak for themselves. The idea of Wednesday is good for me because of so I can use the proposal. Sorry. So for me, this is very good. So if it's going to be after hours for me, I will have a problem in the sense that our study group also is going to clash every day after hours. So I'm actually supporting the idea of today. Let's put it up first time.
I don't have a problem with the slot. If it's 12 or half past 12, it's very awkward because our committee ends at 1.
Okay.
And at times, that is the point at which we either deal with the minutes of the previous meetings or the whoever came to present is responding to whatever I think. And it happened twice or very much. And it's a very challenge. So our sister feeling that rather than 12, we look at, we can even say 12:45 or 1:30. So then you can check out from 4 to 1 this night.
Just Wednesday's fine, except that I know the ethics commission meet on Wednesday, more or less this time. And then the constitutional review is at least to meet Wednesday in this talk. So there should be some cash or
something.
Yeah, I'm fine with the Wednesday. This is the longest time. I think it's fine. So I don't know. I know you said there's another committee meeting around this time.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Next week, but it's not really pretty cool.
Standard.
Okay.
My commission sometimes meets on a lazy day as a kind of Black Jubilee, for example, but I live from the itself. But that doesn't happen every week, like in this situation. But there's just one other thing I want to do, Chair, before we start with the next week's thing, if we go ahead. But and I'm not sure about this, maybe I'm going to need some advice from the previous sitting how they dealt with it, for legal advice, is that the complaint that we're going to be looking at next week, which is the investigation part, is the incident, one of those incidents occurred in the House. And when the Speaker referred that matter to us, there was a view expressed in the House by all political parties, all members. And as a result of that, the Speaker, I understand, referred that matter here. The question I have is, and it might become an issue, I don't know, to what extent are us as members of this committee party to that decision or that complaint? Do you see my point? In that, so, to put it simply, are we not party to the complaint sitting in judgment of the people that they were complaining about.
Many of the matters that are referred here or to the ethics committee or to the disciplinary are referred to the speaker by a political party. That doesn't bind the rest of the park.
Mm.
It's a proposal that was made up to the speaker to decide to refer or not.
Yeah.
So I don't, as a gentleman, I don't agree bound by that.
No. No, sir. In the end, this committee makes a recommendation. So I would think one does not have to be concerned about it. The House will decide, and all the members are in the House. But I would say that if you have an incident which happened quite a while back, Mr. Schoeman against Advocate De Lange,
mm-hmm.
if that happens today, they ended up in a fist fight in the House. If that happens today and one of them are part of this committee, I would certainly say that member shouldn't be part of the But there are cases where you'll say, look, recuse yourself, but in general, although all members were in the House when it happened, it doesn't create any kind of illegality for being part of it.
I also don't think so, except if any of the members here stood up in the House and said, Honorable Speaker, please refer. So in that instance, I think that person, that member was refused himself or herself. But I don't think there's conflict now. What I want us to discuss and be careful about, however next week, that's what I'm going for about now, is the on the step one. People stood up, sitting down, standing up, sitting down, standing up, sitting down. Only one member was asked to leave the House by the Speaker, and she refused. But the rest of the members left on their own, probably towards the speaking. And it's something that I want the lawyers here to apply their mind. There was no point where the speaker said, you leave the House and somebody refused.
Yes.
So although the speaker has referred it to us, but there was no point where she then pronounced that members are disruptive or they are against or whatever the case may be. So something that I've been thinking about it, it's worrying me to say this thing is it's really a grey area.
Mm-hmm.
But the member or the member of the speaker said, leave the House, we're all there.
Yeah.
Except you or the member of the there. And then there was the throwing of the bottle there.
In
essence,
it stays
the woman. Yeah, it was the offer. Had they not walked out, they will still be sitting in the House. And the speaker will not have asked them to do. So let's discuss it next week. It's quite a technical, but it worries me that, you know, how do the Christian people who on their own just left the House? You want to say something?
Yeah.
I'm saying, what do you think about
it? Yeah, the more than share. The one video, the one on the last year, on the 11th of July, is about 20 minutes long. And I think what we'll do will assist in identifying the members who went onto the floor.
Okay.
The other one is 1 hour, 40 minutes long. And I'm not sure the members will watch them both.
1 hour?
40 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, just get a video where people say, all right, fast forward, you can fast forward.
Okay.
think it's unclear from where this at what point the member drafts or give consent or defy the authority of the
The other one is coming in the floor? It's about 20 minutes, 30 seconds.
So let's give ourselves an hour to watch the two video footage. And then Because the other one you can fast forward. The one in the house, in the sauna, we can keep on fast forwarding. Can we start your conversation? Okay, members, see you next. Oh, adoption of the minutes.
Yes.
Just, we have looked at the minutes. We all said the minutes are fine. We didn't have a quorum. Where are the minutes? Can I get a move for the adoption of the minutes? We all looked at them.
Are
they fine? Yeah. Can we stop the minute? All right, thank you very much, Lumas. I hope it has been useful to you again. Putting Lila with us.
Thank
you. Let's go to the house.